Hello, and welcome to The Neighbor Next Door, a podcast about the power and importance of neighboring. I'm your host, Matthew Johnson, and this episode is the second part of a conversation Adam and I had with Ricardo Harris on racism in America. If you haven't heard the first part of that interview, I encourage you to go back and check it out. Ricardo Harris is an educator, a pastor, an organizer, and an entrepreneur. In today's episode, we explore the relationship between racism and economics. So I invite you to join us on the front porch for this engaging and important conversation. You know, I stumbled across a mind-boggling clip from NPR on redlining, right? And
you know, I was going to bring that up, but you guys, since you brought it up, come on, let's go talk
about it. Well, I mean, so to me, it's one of those pieces where it's like when until I knew that, it's hard. It's like I'm not exactly sure how the system, right, is designed to foster racism. And then the premise, which I am not articulate enough to unpack, but the premise is that during the Great Depression and the Roosevelt administration, they began developing home loans, and home loans had to be controlled. That was like 30-year mortgages were a new thing, right? And so they raided neighborhoods, if I understand correctly, basically four levels, like super, super likely to pay back the mortgage, pretty likely to pay back the mortgage, and then like a little risky, and then like real risky, right? And so, and of course, and this is where the racism comes in, one of the flags of a neighborhood being high risk of not paying back the mortgage was that it had Black people in it. And they point out in the clip, right, that wasn't true, right? They were working class folks, and there was no reason to say that was going to be the case, but because of it. So we're talking about the 1930s, and then
This is the 30s. This whole thing was designed in the 30s, and they still use that. So here we are, what, 80 years later, 90 years later? This is the 30s. And so 90 years later, you still use that documentation to determine who you are going to give loans to. And that is a system that's been around since that time. And it's okay. Nobody has spoken about it. It is okay.
Yeah, we're just going to let that go, right? And then, so then what happens is, I mean, from my perception, right, is then the media starts to describe a neighborhood as if, right, it's just, well, it must be the people living there. It couldn't have anything to do with the government interaction or funding availability or access, right, or access to finances, right? And so, and then that just keeps rolling forward, right? It just keeps rolling forward. And that's systemic. Like, that's a system. And it reinforces that and impacts Black families in all these excruciating ways.
It does. And they stay in. So what happens is that there's no way out of that. So when you talk about building, talk about building wealth or handing things down for generations. So in many Black families, this is a whole idea of just survival. We're just surviving and being in that survival mode because, okay, these things are set up. Okay, we're all starting at the same place. I'm going to shift gears just a half second. I'm right next door. My house is right next door to an insurance agency. And one day I was having a discussion with the insurance agent, and we were talking about opportunity. And he said, well, nobody ever gave me anything. I worked for this. I had to work for this. And I had to tell him, I said, I wasn't given the same opportunity. I wasn't. I wasn't given the same opportunity. So, you know, we starting at the same place. No, we're not. So my path is very, very different than your path. It might be clear. I'm not saying you don't have challenges, but your challenges don't look like mine. Not at all. You know, I walk in and you're going to say, sorry. That's okay. Those are challenges that nobody wants to talk about. And I'm not, and people say, oh, quit complaining. Just stop it. Just stop complaining. Just go ahead and live. I can't. Not the life that I could live if I was given opportunity. And that's what racism is about. Racism is about economic access. And that's what people don't understand. It's about economic access. And so it limits certain things from happening based upon the way things are set up. And that's what it is. And it's a struggle. It truly is a struggle. But until we start having these conversations, and these are viewpoints. Like I said, this is my viewpoint. It really is. And somebody else will have a completely, like the insurance guy right next, he had a different viewpoint based upon his struggle. Nobody ever gave me anything. Well, maybe not. You're worth $1 million, probably $2 million now, but you know, nobody ever gave you anything. I love it. You've worked hard. I believe that. You pulled yourself up by your own bootstraps. But I didn't have no boots. Here's another part of the struggle, though. So part of the struggle is those that make it, the Black people that make it, the African Americans that make it. What we've seen is that there has to be somewhat of a disassociation with that past you, that past self, that past neighborhood, in order to continue to stay in the place where you are. And that's tough. You're too good now. So you talk about the internal stuff that goes on. Oh, you're too good now. I speak a certain way and I always have. You too, oh, look at you, uppity. Yeah, I look at you, you got your little stuff on. Oh yeah, you, dude, I grew up at 9th and Grove. That's where I grew up at, you know? I've seen murders, I've seen crazy things. I've seen all kind of stuff in my lifetime. Just because I communicate in a different way doesn't mean I'm better than you. I don't feel that way, not at all. But I'm still committed to this work. I'm still committed to making this world a better place. You know, I want to make this place, I want to make sure that this is the best place it can be, you know. And I think about my son, you know, my kids. My son is a kid, do you know, I didn't let him play with guns, water guns, fake guns. I didn't let him play with guns at all. And to think that he would lose his life by somebody shooting at him was unheard of, right? And so I think about that. And so I've dedicated my life to helping kids, young Black boys, find something better. I remember when me and my wife first got together, I would bring a kid home every single day. I wanted to save the world. I want to change this kid. I want to change that kid. I want to show him that there's a better life in all of this stuff. We had foster kids. Kids that we wanted to help them change their lives, right? And so when Robert died, I was like, oh man, oh, do I keep doing this? But I kept doing it because it was in my heart. It was in my heart. And like I said, around the 3rd, 4th of July, 6th of July, another one of those kids that I mentored, he was killed right there on the highway. Somebody reached out and shot him, you know? But that violence, and here comes the justification for some of this stuff too. So we need more policing to stop this violence. Now, there's this movement about defunding the police. I don't support that. I do believe, however, that people, we need to look at a way how we can begin to support the community in a different way. I believe that, but let's not take it away from the police part. I'm not saying that at all. But let's begin to look at ways in which we can build up the community. You know what I'm saying? How can we build up the community, and how can we, you know, help in a different way? So. All lives matter. That is the opposition that comes against that whole idea to keep you from saying that Black lives matter. That's a struggle in that. But when somebody is suffering from cancer and everything like that, and you say, you know, all cancer matters. No, you're fighting against cancer, right? That's what you're doing. You're saying, hey, let's raise money. Let's do what we can to fix this. It's not a problem. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to be so honest with you. This COVID, this coronavirus, this stuff right here, and because everything was shut down for that period of time, had that not happened, you would not have had the outpour. You wouldn't, because we were at home. And we're watching the news, and everybody, we're stuck on the inside. And so now we're forced to deal with those issues. Oh, wow, this guy is killed by the police. Oh, there's a problem. You have people who are marching and standing up who would normally have to go to work. But they're standing up to say, hey, this is wrong. But it just didn't happen in Minneapolis. It just didn't happen in California. It happened in countries all over the world. People are standing up and they're saying Black Lives Matter. This is wrong. And people are offended by that. I have a problem with that. When people are offended by that, the offense that I take is my life doesn't mean anything. My life doesn't mean anything. I read certain things, right? So when my son died, my son was killed, some people had wrote some things on a post saying basically he deserved it because, you know, it's basically people taking care of their own. And I mean, it was some very, very foul, racist things that was very hurtful, especially during the time when I'm grieving. You know what I mean? Why did your son go to an alternative school if he wasn't bad? And alternative school's not bad. Everybody don't learn the same way. So, you know? You know, so anyway, this pause has allowed everybody to look at things. It really has. And I'm anxious to hear. So now you notice now people are talking about it. You have people talking about this. People are talking about Colin Kaepernick bowing down during the you know, singing of the national anthem. And they're upset about that. They are angry because he is disrespecting the flag and he's disrespecting the military. They've changed the narrative. That wasn't what it was about. Well, you know, what it was about was he's mad because of police brutality. And he said, I'm gonna stand for this. Now watch what happens. And in the midst of all of the stuff that happens, things come all the way back around again. Now, have you ever seen or paid attention to the national anthem? You ever paid attention to the words of the national anthem? Not just the first verse that's sang. I'm talking about the actual national anthem. It has several verses. And one of the verses speaks about, you know, going after the slaves. Basically, that's what it talks about.
Really?
Absolutely.
Whoa, no, I did not know this.
Absolutely. So when people are offended by this, they're saying, hey, he's opposing the flag. I'm opposing the rest of this. Read the rest of it. The rest of it says, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a portion of it. So, you know, and so now watch everything. So now you have, You have whole teams bowing down now. You have everybody. And that's about economics. It didn't have nothing to do with the mission. It had nothing to do with what, the, you know, hey, I'm concerned. Yeah, we were wrong. No, it's about money. You're afraid of losing money. And when it comes down to it, that's so, but I don't put the money here. Don't do this way just to make it go away. That's not going away. This is not going away. There's still an issue every single day. And we can keep talking about this. We can talk about systems and we can talk about this and we can continue to talk about that, but that is the life. I can share this story in that my son was killed, right? He was killed by another black boy. I can share that story. And that's violence in that community. Absolutely. I have an older brother that's been locked up since 1995. He's been in prison for 25 years. So I know about the criminal justice system. I know about both sides of it. I understand it. I get it. Was my brother perfect? No, not at all. He committed some crimes. That's what he did. Did he deserve to be punished? Absolutely.
I think, you know, socially, we have a short-term memory, right? Problem. Like we whatever is in front of us is the thing we're thinking about. And I am concerned that the conversation around racism is going to get pushed down and forgotten, right? And I'm saying that as a person who's not done enough. I mean, I feel a lament in myself about that, and so. I think to keep coming back to it is good because I want to keep it on our minds, on my own mind. I want to keep learning and I want to keep finding ways then to address it. Well, friends, thank you for joining us for this Front Porch Conversation with Ricardo Harris. I hope this conversation is inspiring you to engage in open conversations about racism wherever you are. The Neighbor Next Door is a production of The Neighboring Movement. You can learn more about our work by visiting www.neighboringmovement.org. There you'll find our blog and neighboring tips and other resources that we have created. Again, thanks for listening, and until next time, happy neighboring.